The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
It is a personal mission of mine that has been since the inception of the agency to find the audience for writers. Like, I do firmly believe that there is an audience for your story. You don't have to be famous to publish. In the vein of myth busting, I think there's just so much bad advice and wisdom out there about what it actually takes to get published and also what the experience working with traditional publishers is like.
Greetings, scribes, and welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you prolificness, prosperity, and peace of mind per usual. President and founder of Manhattan-based agency Lucinda Literary, Lucinda Halpern gave me an insider's take this week on why literary agents can't just be deal makers anymore. Lucinda's a literary lecturer and PR agent with over 15 years experience on both the corporate and agency sides of publishing. Specializing in books that change the way people work, behave, and live, she represents authors writing in the categories of business, health, lifestyle, popular science, narrative nonfiction, memoir, and upmarket fiction. Her agency, Lucinda Literary, boasts a roster of authors including New York Times bestsellers Susan Pierce Thompson, Chris Bailey, Kate Flanders, Paul Jarvis, the new work of Nicola Krauss, and Jake Wood. Lucinda also shares publishing insights and motivation for writers, hosts both live and online programs for aspiring authors, and you can grab her free book pitch checklist, The 6 Things Every Book Pitch Needs, at lucindaliterary.com/subscribe, and I'll drop that link in the show notes as well. In this file, Lucinda and I discussed her mission statement, ethos, and the future of publishing, how good agents build lifelong marriages with their authors, while you don't have to be famous to get published, counterintuitive tips about the industry, the old-fashioned art of crafting a book, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. Greetings and welcome back. Yes, we are rolling once again on The Writer Files. I have an esteemed guest today. I've got the president and founder of Lucinda Literary, none other than Lucinda herself. Lucinda Halpern, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for asking. I can't wait to pick your brain about all things publishing and the publishing industry and kind of get in your insider's perspective on what it's like to run your own literary agency, of course. How are you surviving there? I understand that you're in Manhattan, right?
I am in Manhattan. I'm surviving because we had a good idea of getting a secret home office that my children don't know about. So it's literally on our floor. It was a vacant apartment that became vacant during the pandemic, and I've turned it into lots of bookshelves, book posters, room for Zoom. It's been a wonderful home office. So we are good.
That's funny that you could say that it's secret, a secret from the kids, kind of like
a true New York story, you know, find space wherever you can.
Kind of like an escape room, right?
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Okay. I'm for some reason I'm picturing Jodie Foster, but I think that was a movie. It was kind of a nightmarish movie about a...
I hope we're not thinking of the same movie.
Okay. But moving on, I can't wait to bust some myths with you about, something probably every single listener of this podcast has pondered at times. But yeah, let's talk kind of about your superhero origin story, because you have worked... you have this kind of circuitous route, but you've worked on both sides of kind of the business. And so you've seen lots of kind of the moving parts. You've seen how the sausage is made, so to speak. But yeah, talk a little bit about, just kind of the cliff notes of your origins as a publishing insider.
Absolutely. So like so many of us, who entered publishing, I was a creative writer who aspired to work in books for a living. And what I learned along the way, so I started out in the publicity department at HarperCollins. I had a brief stint managing musicians in New York. I moved on to Scholastic, where I was in their corporate marketing and sales division. And then I joined a boutique literary agency. And what I learned in throughout that circuitous trajectory, as you had said, was I really loved the management aspect more so than the singular publicity or editorial piece. So I loved being invested in someone's long-term career and helping them develop their work from the ground floor up. That's sort of what drew me to becoming a literary agent. In terms of actually getting there, because so many people, I think it's one of those aspirational positions of getting to work with authors and develop their book ideas. I knocked down every door in New York City. I mean, I spoke with every agency and I found the one that was willing to give a quarter life with no list and no guaranteed revenue a shot. And I'm forever indebted to her. And through her agency, I worked with Gretchen Rubin, Bob Sutton, a number of terrific authors, and learned a lot, and then started my own company in 2011.
Amazing. And it's been quite a ride for you. But you specialize in books that change the way people work, behave, and live. So talk a little bit about kind of your mission statement, your ethos, and just kind of how you are now seeing kind of the future of publishing post-pandemic.
So I'm someone with a really optimistic view of book publishing from here. I would say that just as you pointed out from our website, our authors are mission-driven and we are mission-driven. So our authors have really big, hairy, ambitious goals of doing nothing short of changing the world. Usually their books are one piece of that puzzle. So it's, a core, very important part of what they do, but they have courses or podcasts or sort of large online followings or television shows that are also sort of spreading that mission. So I think, we really, because of the mission behind what our authors do, we're living and breathing their material and their ideas 24/7. And I think that books remain, even in spite of the very crowded digital world we live in, a very important and influential sort of piece of that puzzle. I always say that when you buy a book, when someone makes the decision to buy a book, they are making an investment in their own self-growth and learning. Like they're ready to change their lives. They're ready to change their thinking and their behavior. That's very different than watching something on Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. It's different than consuming something on Instagram. So it's a physical experience. It's an intimate experience. And there's a commitment that reader has taken. So I think that books still are the most powerful way to get a message across.
Mm-hmm. And when you say books, talk a little bit about the delineation between, just like paper books, ebooks, audiobooks, I know that you deal in all of these things and intellectual property, but is there, when you kind of talk about how we absorb knowledge and, when we come to books, kind of what the state of mind that we're in, I often find that I can do different things, listening to an audiobook than I can really focusing on a book before bed or, taking notes on an author as I'm really absorbing something for literary purposes.
Mm-hmm. So that's such a great question. I would say that at Lucinda Literary and other agencies that authors might work with, we are looking at each of those revenue opportunities and also opportunities for getting a message across. So it would be very common for us to speak with our clients about this idea you have is probably better for a podcast. This idea you have is great as an Audible original. This is something that should really be a book, an ebook, an audiobook. And this is really something that should remain with your course. So it's ideally having a team or a partnership where you can make decisions together about what content is best and in what medium. Mm-hmm. From the position of publishers, I think publishers love to have as many of those intellectual property rights as you described, right? So it's very common for the big publishers to take the audio rights, the print, you know, the hardcover rights, the ebook rights, and they want ownership over all of that. Consumers are really listening to books, reading books on their iPhones or, you know, in their beds. They could be reading it in various formats, and publishers want, you know, want ownership and want access to as many ways that that book is being used. So again, all the more important to have an agent who you trust, who's saying, okay, here are rights that we're comfortable licensing to a publisher, and here are rights that we would want to reserve so that you have the freedom to do what you like with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you talk about your passion for and really kind of, you know, eating, sleeping, and breathing your clients and your authors, you know, talk a little bit about kind of beyond the deal making. And this is something that you've written about, you know, kind of why, again, why agents care more about, you know, writers and maybe now more than ever, as you've kind of discussed.
Mm-hmm. So this is personal, right? This goes back to my own sort of origins getting into this business and caring so much about the careers of my authors versus any one, you know, show they did, if they were musicians, or book they did, if they were authors. It really, you know, it's so intimate for our authors and for so many authors. Having a book is like birthing a baby, right? So it really is that. It gets that much care, it gets that much attention, that much investment for a period of time. So it's so important to find someone that cares as deeply as the author does. In terms of post-deal, you know, again, this is not every agency and it's not every publisher, but I think you can find people who are invested in the long-term partnership, who are interested in that larger strategy you have, you know, mm-hmm. book one, book two, and book three, or what's the next project that you develop from out of this? You know, agents, again, post the deal are doing a number of things. They're advocating for you with a publisher. They are ideally sort of overseeing your marketing and publicity strategy. That's a sort of a specialty of ours. We have a speakers bureau as well, so we're active on the lecture side. We're increasingly interested in the podcast area. So, you know, how our authors are developing their IP for podcast or what those ideas could be. And I think that there's just a lot of sort of trust and advocacy that goes on throughout the process that, you know, these are lifelong relationships. Like this is a marriage. So you really have to trust the person that you're getting into business with. And it's so much more than just making a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really great to hear just kind of the passion and the care behind it that you put into it. And it just shines through, I think, in the work that you do.
Thank you.
And you've had some really, really top-notch authors, and obviously you're developing these relationships over time. But I know that it's not hard to find advice about, you know, what do you do when you finish your book? And But I think, you know, as you put it in the past, you want to bust some of these myths about not only why, you know, agents aren't just deal makers, but also talk a little bit about, I don't know if it's platform or kind of what you've talked about in the past about the things that are most important right now for aspiring authors, you know, who are really looking and maybe have something that they feel is ready for market. What you recommend kind of off the top of your head? I know this is a sprawling, awful way of asking.
I love this question. And I think, Kelton, as you know, like we've developed a whole course and workshops program around it because it is a personal mission of mine. It has been since the inception of the agency to find the audience for writers. Like, I do firmly believe that there is an audience for your story. You don't have to be famous to publish. In the vein of myth busting, I think there's just so much bad advice and wisdom out there about what it actually takes to get published and also what the experience of working with traditional publishers is like. So happy to speak to that.
Thank you for rephrasing my...
Yes, I think it's really important. So I think that where I can begin are the sort of top three mistakes that authors make when they query agents.
Yeah.
Because again, without a connection to an agent or a publisher, your chances are already so slim that it's so important to break through in that query letter. And we see a lot of query letters that sort of read like a very bad 20-something, cover letter, right? Like, my personal passion is, and like, here's what I'm passionate about. But I care what you're passionate about if you've proven to me that someone wants to listen, that someone is going to read, that someone cares about your message. And for me as an agent and for those editors that I work with, that's not so much about size of audience as it is engagement. Mm-hmm. That's more about knowing who your audience is first and foremost, right? And what they crave from you, or what they're clamoring for, what is the book that you can uniquely write? And that's always just the best place to start. It's a tall order. It's a tough question. But if you can really think about not what you're passionate about writing in, because many people are probably passionate about that subject, but more about what people ask you for, you know, if you give talks or on social media, or even just in your conversations, like, what are people asking you to write? I think that's sort of the most important thing you can lead with, who you are and who your audience is. And then we see, especially for fiction, we see a lot of query letters that are so lengthy on synopsis, but leave us with absolutely nothing memorable about the characters or the plot in a strange way, mm-hmm. right? Like, that seems so counterintuitive. But we've gotten this very flowery synopsis, but we haven't sort of heard the dramatic element, you know, the twist of what's going to happen, or a character that sticks out to us as relatable or memorable or interesting in some way. That's on the fiction side. On the nonfiction side, again, a lot of characterizing about the topic, but not, here's the groundbreaking research I'm going to bring in, or here's the myth I'm going to bust, or, you know, here's what's been said on the topic, and here's how I'm going to say something new. That can be a really important sort of element to add.
Yeah.
And then we see query letters that don't, emphasize their marketing potential. So they don't talk about comps that are similar. I think from talking so much with writers as part of our workshops, like, I understand there's a fear around committing to a genre or committing to a comp title, because what you're doing is so obviously different and new. But there's a saying in publishing that no book is a new book. A new book is a new book. So it's similar in the music industry. So everything is sort of a unique, novel twist on the old, tried and proven. And, you know, so if you're not going to be relying on the huge Instagram following, can you talk to us about some titles that have been successful in your area and why yours is poised to have the same success? That can be effective too for a query letter. So yeah, so I hope that answers the question of how to strengthen your chances mm-hmm. of breaking in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you want me to speak more to self-publishing, traditional publishing, or myths about traditional publishing, I can speak to that as well.
Absolutely. I'm sure that that's something that authors are curious about.
Yes.
Going it alone, going it on your own, doing some kind of hybrid thing, you know, paying money to have somebody publish your book with an ISBN or whatever that might look like. But yeah, talk about your take on it.
So it's really so fascinating, Kelton, that this year during the pandemic, I found myself more in the chair of convincing authors why they need to traditionally publish versus self-publish. And I never thought I'd be in that position, right? It's like, wow, I have to pitch why you should work with a traditional publisher. Because, you know, again, the people who are coming to us have, established audiences and credibility. You know, sometimes they're PhDs and they're leading certain research and they're, you know, they have this sort of credibility behind them or audience behind them, and they're wondering what a traditional agent and publisher is going to lend to the equation.
Yeah.
And that's just been so interesting to hear. And, you know, and they're not wrong to ask. And I guess my answer to why traditionally publish in 2021, you know, editors still bring years and years, decades, sometimes centuries of working with books. So there's this expertise that cannot be recreated on the individual level.
Yeah.
You know, that's one. The second most powerful reason is distribution. So if you're someone who's considering going the hybrid route or the self-published route, you really need to be aware of the fact that sheer distribution, like eyeballs on your book, visibility, is a large part of the formula for creating a successful book. And publishers, you know, provide that distribution. They have the bookseller relationships. They're getting you into airports. Like they're creating that distribution vehicle. So those are the most, that expertise and that distribution are the most obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, you know, publishers bring you an assigned publicist, a marketing team, a professional editor with years of editing books. I mean, how valuable is that, right? Like someone who can take what you've crafted and make it so much better.
Yeah.
That's so valuable in of itself, right? And then professional design teams and foreign rights teams and audio teams. So if you want that experience of, you know, really like publishing a book with a team behind you, that traditional publishing is still very much the way to go and still definitely has its value. If you are someone who is really entrepreneurial and your audience is so huge that you know they're going to, you know, buy your book through whatever you do, self-publishing could be a really viable thing for you. But be prepared to do it successfully, to invest a lot of money, and to invest a lot of your time learning the business of publishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also say that publishing is a long and winding road. It really is. Like we have a wonderful success story I love to talk about by an author, Jane Allen, who successfully self-published a book called Black Girls Must Die Exhausted as part of a series.
Mm-hmm.
And she was such a marketing maven. She did 50 book club appearances virtually while the pandemic was happening.
Amazing.
Right? Like nothing was going to stop her. And she was just prepared to do this on her own because she really believed in the mission and of her books and what she was trying to do, which in this case was to allow Black readers to see themselves in a sort of like lighter, not race heavy, but equally deep thinking, sort of funny upmarket fiction. Like that, mm-hmm. that was her mission. Like, why does it all need to be sort of race heavy? She wanted to create something lighter. And fabulous title, great writer. When she came to me, I immediately took the conversation and we got her a 4-book deal with HarperCollins.
Wow.
And it's just proof that publishing is a long and winding road, that if you give your all to something that you've even self-published or published with a small publisher, that big things can happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this is going to be, you know, a bestseller when it comes out this summer. It will probably be a film that people will watch. And, you know, it just is one of those really special stories of, there is someone out there for your work, right? Like whether yeah. it's an agent, a publisher, it really always begins with the readers telling you like that they want more of what you're writing.
You know, I mean, I think a lot of what you're saying about the publishing industry is that this experience is, you know, it can't be duplicated. And what that experience is really that it's a human business. And that, you know, it's built on these incredibly important relationships. You know, I don't think, the publishing industry will be outsourced to AI or automation anytime soon because these knowledge and this creativity can't be duplicated And these relationships can't be duplicated. And I think that's a lot of what you're gambling with when you do, you know, go it alone, or, you know, as you put it. But did you want to just, say one more thing about that, the importance of that?
Yeah, I think you've summed that up so beautifully. You're right. It is a human industry, and it's old fashioned in a beautiful way. I mean, I think that, again, people that I work with are still so invested in this art of crafting books, and it's really not for the faint of heart, right? Like, it takes incredible time. It's very painstaking, but the rewards are so immense. Again, to speak to the why traditionally publish or why publish at all, you know, you can reach people that you would never ordinarily reach through your social media or your inner friend circle with a book. So if you have something that you really want to contribute to the world, I just can't think of a better mechanism than a book to do that. Mm-hmm. And the people that you'll get to work with along the way are really just beautiful intellectual people. I love my relationships in publishing. I do very much miss the era of having lunch with editors. I don't know if or when that is coming back soon, but, the silver lining of the pandemic is, wow, like we're on Zoom having meetings with authors based in Australia, based in London, based on the West Coast in ways that were never foreseen when we needed to schedule and travel and get to those meetings. Like, so the volume of ideas now, and people have had more time to sort of sit around and reflect, and they're not on the speaking circuit, they're not traveling as much.
Yeah.
So it's a vibrant time for books. It's a good time to get an agent's attention. It's a good time to be pitching books to publishers. It's a good time to be meeting readers where they are, which is reading at home. So I think I remain such an optimist about this industry. And, you know, I hope I do. And I hope that writers feel, you know, emboldened and empowered to get their work out there and not sort of be scared off by the bad advice that they hear.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is a heartening and really nice to hear, given what we've kind of all been through mm-hmm. over the last year. You know, I'm sure that some aspiring authors have been, or, you know, have just gotten a little bit exhausted or, you know, are feeling some malaise. Maybe they don't have the contact, or, you know, they haven't been able to get out to the conferences and pitch and hone. And, you know, I've heard some creatives even saying, you know, that it seems like a time, you know, where we've all reflected and had, you know, this ample space to create, but that a lot of, you know, that there's been so much anxiety and so much kind of, I don't know what the word is, it's just kind of trepidation in the air, that it's been hard for a lot of, you know, creatives to, you know, get into a flow state during the mm-hmm. pandemic. But, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've experienced or had conversations with authors who have things in the works. You know, sometimes I go back to this great book by Betsy Lerner, The Forest for the Trees, where she's talking about kind of coaching authors through, you know, deadlines, or, you know, having them work in a back office of their offices to meet a deadline mm-hmm. or something. And, you know, there's something so kind of nostalgic about that time.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. Talk a little bit about kind of your final thoughts to aspiring scribes, and just kind of like how to keep going. Cause this is something I ask authors all the time. Like, how do we keep up our energy during times of, you know, times like this that are just, where everyone's kind of like,
Right. Yeah, I know. I hear you. So I'm someone who firmly believes in accountability, right? Like it takes a village to publish a book. So if you have an agent, that person can be your accountability partner. Like, have that person give you deadlines. If you don't have an agent, have a group you workshop with that you Zoom with like once a month to see where everyone is on their progress. Like we offer a writer's workshop like that. We have a Facebook group that has a similar function. You know, again, join communities where people are doing the same thing you're doing. I have another author I love, Brett Anthony Johnson, who calls it ass and chair time. You know, that's what this is about. And we're all doing a lot of ass and chair time right now, right? So how do you differentiate that from the rest of your commitments and your, burnout is real and the hours at our desks are real. But if you have those either blocks in your calendar, groups you meet with, agent or friend or family member who holds you accountable, you can get the book project done. You can get it off the ground.
Love that.
So again, I really think it's about that accountability and just know, you know, you shouldn't even try to do this alone. You should do this with someone holding you accountable.
That's great. Well, I know that you share publishing insights and motivation at your homepage, lucindaliterary.com. I will point at that. I will point at your Medium, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the spots where you can connect out there. And one of the probably very basic questions listeners might be wondering is, I know that you represent authors who write business, health, lifestyle, popular science, narrative nonfiction, memoir, and upmarket fiction, but I'm sure the guidelines for submissions are on your website. Is that right?
They are. And if your listeners have heard me on this podcast and they want to go and query me, I suggest they say that because we do have a human person, not a robot. reviewing queries as they come in, and
it's not an algorithm.
No, it's not. And if they get that sort of personal note, you know, it will make a difference in getting others at my agency to look as well. You know, I wish writers the best of luck, and I'd love to hear from them.
Well, we appreciate your wisdom, and all the best to you during this. We're kind of seeing some light through the through the trees or you know, at the end of the tunnel, and it feels good, right?
It does. It really does.
have a wonderful weekend. Do you have any fun plans? Get out of the panic room.
Exactly. I mean, right, exactly. It is what it is, but so much of, I'm also married to a literary agent, you know, our weekend time and our evening time is often spent looking at manuscripts, looking at proposals. And so reading is our livelihood, right? Beyond that, yes, we are starting to see people again, and New York City is feeling more vibrant than it's been in a year. So we'll be enjoying some of that outdoor energy.
Spring is here. And
it is.
It's a good feeling. Lucinda, thank you so much. Please come back, enlighten us more. I know you offer lots of resources over there at your homepage. So again, drop into the show notes, listeners, for all the good links there. And we really do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Kelton.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.